This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Buttress, host of Southern Remedies, Relatively Speaking. Join the conversation every Tuesday at 11 as we dissect issues that are important to you and your family. That's Relatively Speaking, Tuesdays only on MPB Think Radio.
From MPB Think Radio, this is Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotridge-Anderson, president of New Perspectives. She's a chartered financial analyst. Buying a new car is a major purchase, so today we're going to talk with Joseph Yoon, an insights analyst from Edmunds.com. This hour, we hope to talk about the car buying process, some of the new technology showing up in our cars, and financing. If you have a car buying question or a personal finance question that Nancy can help you with, email us at money@mpbonline.org. We usually can't get to your email during the show, but Nancy will send you a personal response. So we'll begin our discussion with Joseph in just a few minutes, but we always do like to start the show with financial news in the news. So, Nancy, what's on your mind?
Well, we heard during the news segment about the latest inflation report that was released this morning, and we're still running a little hot, Kevin, and we all have noticed prices rising in a lot of areas. But the three biggest areas right now, surprisingly, are, housing. And if you have a mortgage that's in that 3% range that you're hanging on to, you don't feel that quite so much. But for new home purchases, they are certainly feeling higher interest rates. Rents are going up. The other one is auto insurance. And so we can talk to Joseph a little bit about that. And we talked before the show, Kevin, is it because we're moving around more claims, the price of repairs are higher, the price of cars are higher, replacement cars, all of that. And finally, it's spring break. We're all traveling again, so gasoline prices are going up. Do not expect them to come back down before we hit the end of the summer because we're heading into the high season. What this all means as we head into the fall and that new calculation for our Social Security beneficiaries is don't expect to see those benefits go up as much this next year as they did this last year. While inflation is still hotter than we'd like to see, it's not in that 8 to 9% range we saw before. It has calmed down a bit, and so that will be reflected in the new calculation.
And I guess with the home buying, it's, again, because a number of things that you're paying for the labor of having the home bought, but then there's all the materials that go into.
Oh, the materials. And certainly with new home construction, we have seen such a huge bump in pricing there, but that also is affecting the existing houses too.
This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. We're going to be talking today with our guest, Joseph Yoon, insights analyst for Edmunds.com about buying a new car. Joseph, thanks for joining us. As we emailed back and forth, we realized that it was just about a year ago that we had you on the show. So thanks for coming back on. We'll try to get you on a little bit more frequently. It's always an interesting conversation when you join our show. If you would, tell us a little bit about what an insights analyst does at Edmunds.
Hi, guys. I'm glad to be back. Hopefully everyone's had a good year. What I do at Edmunds.com is a lot of times I'm tracking what customers are paying for their vehicles these days, month over month, whether that's a new car or a used car. And also I'm trying to look at what cars are coming out, what customers can look forward to at their dealership the next time they purchase a vehicle, and just being generally educated on the industry and how that is going and some trends that we're seeing or whether that's good or bad, and things like that, and just helping consumers out or trying my best to help consumers out with their next big decision.
And I guess a lot of that information you can funnel to Edmunds.com. So tell us a little bit about some of the things that people can find at your website.
Yeah, we have all sorts of shopping resources for buyers. We have very in-depth reviews of all the cars that are available on sale today. We have a very, very comprehensive breakdown of incentives and discounts that are available to you down to your zip code usually. We also have new and used car vehicle listings. So we're kind of a one-stop shop if you're in the mood to buy a car.
So my question, and I think Nancy has a couple as well, so we'll kind of keep the pump primed while we wait for some folks to call in. How close are we to the driverless car?
I would say we are pretty far out.
Okay.
Oh, no, I didn't want to hear that.
I think we have enough technology to do a lot of the driving. A lot of advanced cruise control systems now can stop for you, keep you in your lane. You just kind of have to be in the seat and make sure you're ready to take over. But in terms of what we consider fully driverless technology, it means that every single vehicle on the road has to be sharing information in real time. And not only that, the vehicles also have to be speaking to the infrastructure. So your streets and all the roads that you travel on need to be kind of connected to the network in order for the vehicles to communicate. So whether it's signals or bus stops or any kind of feature on the road that exists today that we don't even think about, the vehicle has to be cognizant of that at all times. And in order for that to happen, not only does the technology need to be there, but we don't have any regulations in place for that, for it to be safe. We don't have any standards between all of the manufacturers. You know, automakers are a global business, and everyone kind of needs to be on the same page, or at least within their regions, right? Whether it's North America or Europe or Asia. And we don't have any of that guidance yet from the government. And so for us to, I mean, I'd be happy if we can get there in my lifetime. I'm in my late 30s. But well, I, you know, who knows?
I think that means no for us, Kevin.
yeah, I mean, I think the pieces are slowly coming together, but I think there's a lot, we have a pretty long runway before we can fully, you know, safely say, oh, this is a fully driverless vehicle.
So scaling that back a little bit then, are there advances being made in some of the driver assist technology? I know that between last year and this year, I bought a 23 Soul, a Kia Soul, and my old one was about 10 years old. So I was really impressed with all the driver technology that you have. And as an older driver, you know, I like that I'm going out of my lane or I'm getting too close to one of the other cars there. So what's on the horizon in terms of maybe the assisted technology?
I think a lot of luxury cars have this now, especially the more expensive ones, where you could say it's almost autopilot-ish. There's different levels of autonomous driving, I think, level one, level two. Level one is like basically lane change, lane keep assist, and things like that. But some of the more luxury vehicles, if you have something set in your navigation system, and let's say you're being a courteous driver and you're in the right lane on a long road trip and you get stuck behind a big rig, you can signal to change the lane and the car will do it for you. And so these are features that will only trickle down to a car like the Kia Soul maybe in the next 10 years. And I think they're going to be hugely helpful, especially for everyone, right? Not just older drivers or younger drivers, people who have general anxiety about driving. Any kind of assistance system can help them. People who are distracted drivers. We don't want people to be distracted, but with our phones in our hands 24/7, it's almost impossible to be not distracted. So we have all of these safety features in place. Not only do we have features like lane keep assist, we have blind spot warnings. So that, you know, when we're in a hurry and we try to make that next exit, maybe take a second. And the car will tell us, it's like, hey, take a second, make sure you don't hit that car in your blind spot. We have things like that. We have brake assist systems so that if you're looking to see why your boss was calling you at this ungodly hour and look down at your phone and miss the car that was stopping, the car will help you out and things like that. And I think these are all very helpful features. Some purists, deep diehard enthusiasts, like, wow, I like to do all of my driving myself. But at the end of the day, it's about the safety of everybody on the road, right? And I think these driver assist systems and safety systems are a big help for everyone.
This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. We're going to be visiting today throughout the hour with Joseph Yoon, Insights Analyst with Edmunds.com, talking about new cars and the new car buying process. If you have a question for us or if you have a personal finance question that Nancy can help you with, you can email the show to money@mpbonline.org. Let's go ahead. We'll take our first break. When we get back, more car buying and car talk with our guest, Joseph Yoon, right here on MPB Think Radio's Money Talks. You're listening to Money Talks. Our website, moneytalks.mpbonline.org, is one way to hear past broadcasts. You can also download the MPB Public Media app for your smartphone, and you can listen to all the local MPB Think Radio programs on your schedule. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotridge-Anderson, president of New Perspectives. And our guest today is Joseph Yoon, insights analyst with Edmunds.com. So we're going to be talking about new cars and new car buying, but we always look for personal finance questions as well. We do have a caller on the line, and it looks like a question Nancy can help with. Freeman has called in today. Good morning. You're on the air with us, so go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. I wanted to find out from Nancy whether or not if I lose my job and I got a considerable amount of money in my 401k, can I pull that money without paying that 10% penalty?
How old are you, Freeman?
I'm 56.
You're still going to have a penalty if you are under 59 and a half, unless that 401k has a specific language in it that allows for distributions at 55 upon separation of service. So check with your HR department and find out if they allow that at 55. If they do, then you need to leave it with the 401k so you can draw without that extra penalty. You still will have to pay tax on the amount that you pull out. But many of those 401ks are opting for the IRA limit, which is 59 and a half. Again, if you do have that 55 and you roll that over to an IRA, you're going to be under the 59 and a half age limit with that 10% penalty. So you're in that middle ground at 56. Be very careful. Talk to your HR folks first.
Okay, yeah, because when I Google it, I just seen stuff say 55, and I didn't know the company had to participate in the plan. For you to qualify for that?
Well, every 401k has its own document, and they're all different. There are certain guidelines they have to adhere to. So, again, check with HR and see what the age limit is for withdrawing without penalty.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thanks, Freeman, for your call. This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. We're visiting today with Joseph Yoon, an insights analyst with Edmunds.com. Joseph, when it comes to financing a car, there are a number of different options. You can go with a bank or a credit union, but also I think most of the major car companies offer offer rates through their lending branch, I guess you could say. Are they fairly competitive, the rates that you can get through the dealership?
I would say they're okay
not as good as they used to be, right?
Definitely not. 2023 was a rough year to be financing a car.
So what are you seeing as far as current rates on financing?
Current rates are starting to improve, finally. And we're seeing a lot of people generally opt for about a six-year loan these days for a new car. But if you opt for something like even a five-year loan, you might be able to get a couple points knocked off the interest rate. We have the average new car interest rate right around 7%.
Wow.
Which is, you know, it's not great, right? 7% is a lot of money. And so, you know, anything you can get off of that is what I would consider a plus. And I think the biggest incentives right now are if you go for the shortest loan term that you can afford. The downside to that, of course, is that ultimately your monthly payment will be higher. But at the end of the day, you're going to be saving thousands and thousands of dollars in total cost of that loan. And so if you can do that, whether that's through the manufacturing lender or whether that's through your credit union or your local bank, you should definitely entertain every single option that you have. And especially if you have good credit, right? You're most likely to be approved for these shorter loan terms, the better your credit score.
So do you see a difference between financing for new cars versus used cars?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot harder. It's a lot worse to finance a used car because the interest rate is above 11% for a used car.
My goodness, yeah.
and so it's really tough. It's really tough out there if you're looking to finance a major portion of that purchase. If you have a big down payment, if you have a great trade-in, if you have great credit, if you have all of these things kind of in your favor, then it hurts a little less. But if you're, let's say, for example, you're joining the workforce for the first time and you're a young person with limited help from your parents and you need to get into a car to get to work and you find out the best interest rate you qualify for is 12-13%. That's a huge chunk of that monthly payment that you're paying towards interest. And so
And Joseph, let me ask about the health of the used car market, because, of course, when we went through the pandemic, it was crazy out there when the when you were trying to purchase a used car. Has that settled down at all?
It's beginning to settle down, but it hasn't quite settled down yet. And I think the biggest problem right now for the used car market is that it's the more expensive stuff that's getting cheaper, because the new car inventory is improving. So, you know, big luxury cars, big trucks, big sedans, those are the cars that are seeing the benefits the most. But, you know, people who could afford those could already afford a new car anyway. So that's not really the problem. The problem is that for the lower end of the market, you know, stuff in the somewhere between $10,000 to $20,000, that stuff hasn't still come down as much as we'd like. So the vehicles are older or have a little more miles. And, you know, at the end of the day, that equates to added repair costs and time spent at a repair shop instead of on the road. And so hopefully, as this year goes on and into next year, we should see, or we hope for, a more normal used car market, but we're not quite there yet.
What about the term on those used car loans? You mentioned right now many people with a new car loan are stretching it out over 6 years. Will they let you have a six-year loan on a used car?
Yeah, I mean, we still have the used car loan at 6 years as well. I think one of the things that happened during the pandemic and with the crazy pricing across the board, right, was that lenders realized that, hey, like, if we keep the terms a little too strict, people aren't going to be able to afford anything. So we got to give a little. And I think inherently, because people need cars for work, I think lenders have considered the risk a little lower than it used to be. And also, in general, cars are just built better than they ever have. And so we used to always get worried after your car hits 10,000 or 100,000 miles. But I feel like most cars these days can easily do 100,000 miles without too big of an issue. So I think that's also an indicator as well. Not just that, you know, people can't afford them, but the cars themselves have improved dramatically.
This is Money Talks, and we're visiting today with Joseph Yoon, an insights analyst for Edmunds.com, but we always look for your personal finance questions as well. More car buying throughout the car buying conversation throughout the hour. We're not actually buying a car on the radio this morning, but first we've got a couple of credit questions. Let's start in Hattiesburg. Chris has called in today. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air, so go ahead.
Thank you. I have a credit and a debit card from a local bank. Anytime I go to New Orleans or to Mobile, they will restrict the card when I make just a common purchase, and I'm getting a little annoyed with it. Is there a good card, or where can I find a list of good cards that use multi-factor authentication that might be able to bypass some of it?
Chris, I'm really surprised to hear this, because typically any kind of domestic travel, you won't find restrictions. The restrictions will pop up if you travel internationally and you haven't alerted them. So that surprises me. I would say go to creditcard.com and look for a different card that might fit your need, because that's really annoying, especially if you are regularly traveling to these places and you're trying to make purchases and you get denied. So that is pretty unusual in a situation like that. I would certainly look for a different card, not necessarily needed one that has multi-factor identification, but one that recognizes your pattern of travel and allows you to continue using it.
Thank you.
All right, Chris, thanks for your call. Let's stay on the phone lines. Off to Memphis we go next. Daryl is on the line. Go ahead, Daryl. You're on the air with us.
Well, good morning once again. And good morning. Good morning to Nancy and the guest.
Good morning.
I missed his name.
Joseph.
Good morning.
Yeah, Joseph. Okay. Look, this question I have goes back to the topic of conversation two weeks ago. And this is related to today's topic. It has to do with credit. And like so many listeners, I've purchased new and used cars. And my question is specifically, why does a hard credit check negatively affect your score?
Well, the assumption is that you are going to add to your debt at that point. And so if you're doing a hard one, you have already applied for it. You're waiting to be approved. So again, they're assuming you're adding on more debt. That's going to affect all of your scores. So you don't want a hard check until you're really ready to make the purchase. Sometimes they can do a soft check. If you don't proceed with the loan, given a little bit of time, it won't take long, then that bump down will disappear. But again, the assumption is you're taking on more debt. That's going to change all of the calculations and lower your score.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you all.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Daryl, good to hear from you again. But I would also say, Nancy, if you are someone who had good credit to begin with, again, that's sometimes just a temporary ding in your credit
exactly,
score.
Exactly.
So we're going to go to another break here in just a minute. But Joseph, we talked about car buying. Also, one of the other options is leasing a vehicle. Who do you think is the kind of the person that would benefit most from leasing as opposed to buying a car?
Well, I'm a person that leases cars. I've been leasing cars for 10 years now. And generally, the people that are leasing are people who drive fewer than 15,000 miles a year. They have sometimes people do it for businesses because you can write off a lease expense as a business expense if you use the vehicle for business. And also, I just like the smell of a new car. I'm not writing anything off. This is just for me. And you know, if you're currently working and plan to be working for a long time, and you expect to spend a certain amount of money towards your car for the foreseeable future, it's a great way to kind of save a little bit of money on the monthly payment. Generally, lease payments tend to be a little lower than financing the vehicle outright. But again, the downside is you have to keep paying it. You don't get to stop the payments at a certain point. And that's kind of the dividing line. Some people like to keep their cars for a long time or drive very long distances. And if that's the case, then leasing is definitely not the correct option for you.
And I'm wondering if you're starting to see a bump in leasing because of these high interest rates on a purchase. And we all live with that notion. We don't think about the overall cost. We think about what does it cost me every month. And leasing is attractive, as you say, because of those lower monthly payments. And then a lot of people might be getting into it and find at the end of their lease that they've exceeded the mileage. And then they have to make a big payment to be even with the leaser.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. Because of the interest rates, the lease payments also went up dramatically the last couple of years. Because where leasing is kind of the financial hack for people that are leasing is that, like, you need to have very significant discounts from the manufacturer and lower interest rates in order for the lease to be noticeably cheaper than financing. But the last couple of years, because the interest rates have been so high, that hasn't been the case. So a lot of people that were traditionally leasing decided, hey, I'm not going to, like, there's no benefit for me here on the monthly payment. I'm just going to buy the car like everyone else. And so we actually saw a huge dip in leasing, and that's now just barely starting to come back.
This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. Let's go ahead and take another break. When we get back, we'll continue visiting with our guest for the hour, Joseph Yoon, Insights Analyst for Edmunds.com. Nancy's here as well. Money Talks is MPB Think Radio's personal finance broadcast. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lottridge-Anderson, President of New Perspectives. We're visiting today on Money Talks with Joseph Yoon, Insights Analyst from Edmunds.com, talking about the cars and the car buying process. We've got some open phone lines, so if you have a question about buying a new car or a used car or leasing a car, or if you have a personal finance question for Nancy, you can email money@mpbonline.org. So, Joseph, one other way of buying a car that I think is becoming more popular, I guess maybe based on the amount of advertisements I see for it, and that is buying a car online through Carvana, CarMax, CarGurus, those sorts of websites. Any thoughts on what consumers should be aware of if they go that route?
Sure. You can also buy your car online from a dealership. You can, but generally, if you're kind of looking for, you know, checking out after putting a car in the cart experience, like Carvana or CarMax or any of those sites. I think one of the things to think about is if you consider how convenient it is, that convenience has been baked into the price of the vehicle. One of the big reasons why Carvana and a lot of the used car dealer websites or used car online websites have been so popular is because the used car values have been so crazy, which means that they were also offering a little bit more than their competitors. We have a vehicle appraisal portion on our website, so you can kind of figure out what your trade-in is worth. And a lot of the times, you know, we're not just pulling data for us and from Kelley Blue Book or things like that. We're also pulling data from these retailers and what you can get from these retailers if you trade in your vehicle with them. And a lot of the times, CarMax and DriveTime and those online retailers are at the top of the list in terms of their offer, which means that in order for them to make money on that car, they also have to charge the next buyer more money. And so, yes, it is very convenient. And yes, you know, it's very easy, but you also have to remember that convenience. You're paying for that convenience, really. And I think the biggest thing is that for used cars, sometimes you get into a car and they smell funny, right? And
we know you like the new car smell.
Yeah. And sometimes you get into a car and go for a test drive and there's like a weird noise coming from the back passenger side corner. And if you buy a car fully online, then those are things that you're going to kind of miss out on. And I think that's something to kind of consider when you're, instead of just, you know, thinking about the convenience, especially since we mentioned very early how expensive car repairs are getting. So maybe you know, getting some seat time especially in a used car, getting some seat time, making sure you like the car, making sure that you like the way the car drives and feels and sounds. I think those things are important. But if you're not worried about that, if you're buying somewhat of a newer used car and you don't really care about those things, or you've got a great warranty plan that you lined up with your insurance company or something, then by all means, it's great. But there are prices to pay for that convenience, and usually it's just money, more money.
Joseph, what about the electric vehicle market? I see a lot of EVs on the road, but I'm also reading a lot of articles about that market kind of plateauing and dealers sitting with EVs on the lot.
Yeah, I think plateauing is exactly the right word for it. I would say from what we're seeing, the early adopters are done. They have already bought the car. And so it's getting the every man and every woman into the EV. That's kind of the challenge. And that's kind of where the dealers have hit their plateau. And I think the biggest issue for a lot of people is that EVs just are more expensive, even with however you figure out how to qualify for the $7,500 federal tax rebate or whatever incentives that they're offering. Even with all of those things, they're still kind of expensive right now. I think they're
even with the savings in the price at the pump now.
I think so, and I think one of the big things too is that whenever the last time it was you bought a vehicle, like did you have to Google where the gas station was?
Right, that's true.
And the answer is no, right? And for me, I actually just leased an electric vehicle 2 weeks ago. And the first thing I had to do was like, hey, where are the local chargers around me? How busy are they? You know, because I don't have I can't install like a level 2 charger at home because our garage is so old. I have to do a bunch of electrical work just to install a little plug at home. And so I think that's kind of a big barrier for whether the actual reality of owning an EV is as difficult as people make it out to be. I don't think so. But a lot of the times, once we take the money out of the equation, which is difficult, but once we take the money out of the equation, buying a car is very emotional. And if you have a mental hurdle of like, oh, I heard that, you know, I got a friend with an EV and he can't get a charger anywhere. All the chargers are full all the time. And if you have anecdotes like that in your life, it's very hard for you to also commit to that. and think that it's a good idea for you, even if it, like, let's say, for example, you don't go on road trips or you don't need public charging infrastructure and you can just charge at home, then, like, that's a totally, that problem doesn't exist for you, having to deal with chargers outside of your home, right? But having people say, like, oh yeah, like, I try to charge at you know, the Buc-ee's or whatever large charging network you have, and it was a disaster. I had to wait 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And these things are...
Joseph, have you been to Buc-ee's? You will be there an hour.
We don't have any Buc-ee's out here.
You don't know what you're missing.
Yeah,
let me also ask, with EVs, are they showing up in the used market?
Yes, a little bit, but I think the difficult thing is that... the way the tax credit system is structured is the car needs to be under $25,000 for to qualify for the $4,000 tax rebate. And the fact of the matter is there's very few EVs that are desirable at under $25,000. And so that's another hurdle, right? Because you, let's say you wanted to get into it and you found a great car, but it's like $28,000. And so you're not going to get that tax credit that you kind of factored into your budget. And so, yeah, the market will get better, obviously. Within the next 5 years, there should be more lower-priced EVs coming out. That will also help with the inventory situation in the used market as well. It's just that the market is in such an infancy stage at the moment that we're having these growing pains. And we'll just have to see how this all plays out in the next 5-10 years.
This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. Got a couple callers to get to. We'll go back on the phone lines. Charles has called in from Jackson today. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. Nancy, I have a question.
Okay.
For you. We were talking about a call, say someone is thinking about buying something and someone will, say, contact the credit bureau for a score.
Right.
How they call their score to go down. What are your thoughts about that? You know, the credit bureaus, they sell this information to companies that use that to determine risk. So, given that, what do you thought that this is really a self-serving thing for the organizations that lend money? Because if they can find a way to bump the person's credit down, they can then charge a higher interest rate. So they're earning more money based if the credit is worse. So, and so that issue, and then is one thing, and one could make an argument that a person's ability to pay is impacted when they borrow money, not when they are seeing if they can borrow money. So anyway, just throwing that question out.
I understand your concern, and we have a lot of situations like this where it seems like there might be a conflict of interest. The banks, yes, are getting this information from the ratings agencies, but the banks want to be competitive. They are in the business of selling money, and so they just want to make sure that they set the price is right for that really reflects the full risk there. So there is some of that, a little bit of a conflict, but the tension that kind of holds it all together, Charles. But I would also say there's a difference between a soft check and a hard check. And you want to make sure if they're going to do a hard check, it's because you are at the point of, I'm ready to make the purchase, I'm filling out the application, because that will have a bigger impact on your score.
All right, Charles, we appreciate your call. Before our next break, Joseph, one final thing on the EVs. Again, you know, you pull into a gas station, it takes, what, 5 minutes at most to fill up? The thing I'm concerned about are...
Oh, but you have to go in, you have to get little candies, there's the restroom stop.
Well, how long is the average charge taking these days? I mean, is that something that I guess is they're trying to cut down to make it faster, I would imagine?
Yeah, so generally manufacturers are aiming for a 30-minute charge to get from 10% to 80% battery. And it seems like a long time, but realistically, the only time you're going to need to charge that long is on a road trip, right? And I actually, on my last road trip to Northern California, I actually timed how long I was at my, you know, brake stop. And it was 29 minutes from pulling into the gas station getting the coffee at the Starbucks next door, going to the bathroom, making sure my kid had his bathroom break and a snack. And so I think there is a lot of anxiety there about the time that you have to spend charging. But at the same time, at the end of the day, the time you spent taking a break on the road in a gas car is roughly about the same as well.
Joseph, I just want to say I'm impressed that you had a child with you and you made a turnaround in 29 minutes.
I guess we got lucky. We got him to Starbucks, got him a little fruit pouch. He housed that, you know, because he houses everything. And then we took him to the bathroom and we were on our way. Yeah.
We're glad you found our show, Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotrich-Anderson, president of New Perspectives. Here's a reminder, every Tuesday at 10, you listen live to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio immediately following our show. We're visiting today on Money Talks with Joseph Yoon, an insights analyst from Edmunds.com. But we also have Mike on the line with a question. So we go to Past Christian and invite Mike into the show. Good morning, Mike. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was calling. I'm trying to get a definitive answer on this question. If you have a credit card right now and say you've got a balance of $6,000 and your interest rate is like 9 to 10%, so you're paying a lot of money right there. However, you walk out to your mailbox and you get something in the mail that says 0% interest for 15 months. Is it wise to go ahead and take that? Or I've heard people say that every time you have your credit check, that it puts dings on
your score, right?
Right. It puts a strain on your score.
Well, Mike, I think it depends on what you're trying to do. Now, if you've got a credit card only charging you 9 to 10%, you are golden right now, because the average credit card rate in this country is about 21%. So that's one thing. But if you have a balance that you can't clear out in 1 month or in a few months, and you're dealing with it, and it's a high interest rate card, you might want to take this offer. It's called a balance transfer. Any balance transfer is typically going to cost you 3% of whatever that balance is, just to get it moved over. And that's assuming that you can get approved, because again, they're going to check your score. That can affect all of those things. But if you're trying to address a debt and you are facing a really high interest rate and you know that you can get rid of it within their time limit, so if they're saying 15 months, then you have to make sure it is gone, because by the time that 15 months hits, it is suddenly going to be jacked up on that rate to a very high rate, maybe even higher than what you left. So you have to be careful about that. Some people like to play the balance transfer game, and we're finding that they're getting caught, because then you won't get approved. So just think about what your goal here is. If it's $6,000 and you think, gosh, it's going to take me a long time to get rid of that, but I think I can get rid of it within 15 months, it might make sense. You just have to look at the math. What are you being charged on the current card? What is the cost of transferring? Read the fine print.
Also, Mike, I think on some of those balance transfer offers, if you do not pay the full balance before the offer expires, the interest that you would have accrued is tacked on there as well.
To the whole thing, yeah.
Right.
Oh, so you mean if you don't pay it within 15 months.
Right. Then all the interest that you're saving.
They'll go back and hit you with interest for the entire time.
Exactly.
Possibly. Again, read the fine print on how all of that will work.
Okay. And is it true, though, does it affect your credit score that every time you have
a new
Experian or somebody check here?
Yes, because, and especially with the balance transfer, because you're opening a new card and keeping the old card open. So that means there's more debt that you can take on. And all of that will go into that calculation of your score.
Okay, so if you do it, should you go ahead and close out that account that you...
I would recommend that you do that. Now, one caution here is that if that old account is an account that you've had for maybe 10 years, that really helps you on your score, because they look at the length of credit and how you have paid on that. So that may be a case where you keep the old one open just because that factors into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, good enough. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Mike, thank you for the call. Joseph, let's wrap up. We'll be on the car lot looking for a car. And, you know, car dealers have a reputation for being high-pressure salespersons and that sort of thing. But, again, referencing my last buying experience, I didn't think that it was as pressure as it used to be. Is that the case, do you think, from what you've seen?
I would say the last couple of years have been so crazy that dealer salespeople are still kind of feeling like you have to earn the right to buy the car. But I think a lot of where that pressure comes from is that for a long time, salespeople were, you know, they had to really fight you to sell the car. You're like, why don't you buy it? Why, you know, if you sign today. But I think because demand has been so high for vehicles the past couple of years, car salespeople have been a little less pushy. We'll see how that goes when incentives and discounts start coming back and there's a demand isn't as high as it used to be. But, you know, I think it's important. It's cars are very expensive these days. We have the average new car purchase at $47,000, $48,000. And, you know, if you're paying 7% on that, that's a lot of money, right? And you have the right, and as a customer, it is their job to earn your business. So if you feel like they're bullying you, if you feel like they're being pushy and making you, you know, feel uncomfortable about spending all of your hard-earned dollars, just walk out, go home, you know, have a moment to yourself, and give them something to think about. Like, oh, like, why'd they walk out? I thought they wanted this car. It's like, well, because you were being mean to me. I don't like that. And I think that's a good idea to have, especially, and, you know, maybe take someone with you. Have some emotional support in your corner that would be like, hey, this salesperson's being mean. I don't think you should do business with them. If you have that voice in your corner, I think that'd be a big help.
Joseph, I want to go back to what you said earlier in the program, which is a car purchase is an emotional purchase. We think mm-hmm. about, you know, how will we look in this car? What will people think mm-hmm. about us? Even the color that we choose. And I would say to people out there, be smart financially, especially with these higher yeah. interest rates. Don't get so attached to that. Don't let your ego get involved and your emotions yeah. get involved. And really make sure you can afford it, because it's going to be a long-term commitment with a six-year possibly average time that you'll be paying this back.
Yeah, I think it's very important. Like, you know, in my case, I have to make sure that a child seat fits in whatever car I buy. You know, like, I can't just think about, do I look really cool in it? And, a lot of that is coming to accept the fact that I'm a dad now, and that makes me uncool by definition. So.
Yeah, and speaking of uncool, Ryder, who is not here today, we have really harassed him because his latest car purchase is a minivan.
Yeah, I was wondering where he was today. I think he was on the call with us last time.
Yes, he was. All right, thanks, Joseph. That's going to wrap us up for today. Money Talks is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio, funded in part by generous financial support from listeners. To hear today's show or a previous show, you can visit moneytalks.mpbonline.org or listen to the podcast by searching for Money Talks on your podcasting app. So our call screener today, thank you, was Charles Arnold. So for Dr. Nancy Lotridge-Anderson, I'm Kevin Farrell. And thanks to our guest, Joseph Yoon. You can join us every Tuesday at 9 for Money Talks. It's heard only on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.